Cory, are you prepared to come up and deal with 516?
I thought that's what the television was all about.
On which?
I said, I thought that's what the television was all about.
Closed circuit testimony.
Okay, do you have anything further with respect? We sort of short shifted people's testimony last time because we got involved in a timely.
Madam Chair, there was a Cory Streisinger, Governor Goldschmidt's legal counsel. There was discussion about Senate Bill 516 last time. My prepared testimony has been distributed to the committee, and I did review it briefly. I see no need to repeat it at this time, but I would be pleased to answer any questions or if there are areas the committee would like me to amplify.
We will get you here during work session and during consideration of any amendments, and thank you. Let's go to John Collins, who is
Madam Chair, can I ask one quick question?
Yes.
Cory, who has access to the video under this bill? For instance, is there ever a possibility that end up on the evening news under some action? Is somebody trying to get a hold of that under Freedom of Information Act or something?
Madam Chair, Senator Brenneman, that is not covered by this bill. As you're probably aware, the Oregon Supreme Court has recently determined that cameras will be allowed in the courtroom, but there are some exemptions for cases involving sex crimes, which these bills would apply to. Portions of the videotape, which are, if there is a videotape deposition or closed circuit, portions which are presented in open court would be part of the record, the same as any other evidence that is shown in open court. But the availability of that to the evening news, I believe, would be governed by that rule adopted by the Oregon Supreme Court. I have not, however, looked at that issue in any detail. Portions which are not used in court, I see no reason that they would become part of a record or public.
But this only really covers the times when a prosecutor might feel there's going to be emotional, psychological harm to a young person that it's chosen to be used. Won't be used in every instance.
Madam Chair, Senator Brenneman, that's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's call John Collins, if you'd like to come up, please, John.
Testimony, and I'll try to summarize that now. We believe the intent of the bill is to make it possible for a child to testify by videotape deposition where live trial testimony would cause the child severe emotional or psychological harm. In other words, the intent is to make it easier for the child witness. District Attorneys Association strongly believes that unless the amendment is added, the bill will make it harder on the child, not easier. If the defendant has the ability to move the court for an order deposing the child, the defendant would, at a minimum, have the ability to require the child to submit to a psychological examination to support the defense motion. Even if the effort to order a deposition goes no further, the defendant has subjected the child to further invasion and trauma and may even further frighten the child into recanting or withholding truthful testimony. If the defense gets a psychologist to say the child would be severely emotionally or psychologically harmed by testifying in person, the defense could thereby force the child to submit to a deposition. In such a deposition, defense counsel and/or the defendant is more likely to attempt to intimidate the child since his or her actions would be less evident to a jury. The deposition could be in quarters that force the child to be even closer to the defendant. The bill could even be used by defense counsel to make it more difficult for the state to use the direct trial testimony of a child, even where the child may testify with little difficulty. The direct trial testimony of a child is almost always the most important part of the state's case. We believe the bill, if amended, may reduce trauma to a particularly traumatized child. However, if the bill is not amended, the bill would empower the defense to increase the potential trauma, not reduce it. Finally, we believe that as a matter of policy, the decision to seek an alternative to in-court trial testimony should be on the party calling the witness or the witness, not the defendant against whom the witness is called to testify. I've also attached to my written testimony a letter drafted to the head of the Children's Services Division on the general issue of videotape depositions of children. And in that, there's an analysis of the pros and cons and why, overall, the District Attorneys Association, in balance, is opposed to video depositions. To summarize, then, there are a lot of problems with video depositions that, in most cases, will make it more difficult for the child, not less. But if amended, as the District Attorney's Association has submitted, then we would support the bill.
Are there questions, John? Thank you very much for your comments. Appreciate it very much, your willingness to share your information. I would ask that committee members read carefully this testimony, that written testimony that's been presented. And what we're looking at, there's a District Attorney's Association. We also have their amendment, which Jack might want to refer to.
I should mention the material from Mr. Collins is dated February 27. He's got his seal on it, so you could recognize it by that way. You also find in your file some amendments entitled Proposed Amendments to 516. These are amendments. There was a meeting in my office between myself, Corey Streisinger, John Collins, the DA, and a representative of Oregon Criminal Defense Association, David Groom. These are the two things that they agreed on, and that's not to say that I certainly can't speak for OCDLA, but that's not to say they support the bill. That's simply to say that if this bill were to be passed out, I think the parties are in agreement on these two changes, and we can discuss those more fully later.
What pages do those lines appear on?
Yes.
Sorry, on page one.
Page three, you'll see that stapled to the amendments, there's a hand engrossed copy to make it.
Okay.
And I would ask Robert Reed to come forward, who's here to testify from the defense lawyers.
I've prepared a couple of amendments to 516.
Good.
Can I pass those out now? They're quite short.
Please. Thank you. You need to put your name in these.
Madam Chairman and Senators, the amendments that I proposed are rather brief. One of them speaks directly to the point that was just brought up about the pretrial amendments, or excuse me, the deposition. In line 19 and 21 of the bill, it authorizes, of course, pretrial deposition of the alleged victim.
Page three? Are you referring to, are these all page three amendments?
Pardon me?
They are.
Okay.
Yes, that's the only.
We do need to ask the people, and we need to begin to train everybody involved here that we're not clairvoyant. We need dates,
okay.
And we need pages, and we need by whom the amendments have been drafted.
Okay, I'm sorry, I'll do that in the future.
We end up getting very sort of piles of information that are progressively refined, and it's very important to the committee.
I understand. I just wrote these early this morning, so.
Great, I understand. It's not really directed at you, because you're not down here regularly, but thanks.
Thank you.
Page three.
I just wanted to point out that depositions are rarely, if ever, used in criminal cases because of constitutional considerations of the open administration of justice, of confrontation, and the right to cross-examination. They are virtually never used in criminal cases. I see some problems with allowing a pretrial deposition, not just because of the constitutional considerations, but also once the trial is underway, there will inevitably be other things that the child will have to be cross-examined about. That will require a break during trial, during which the child will have to be brought either in court for live testimony, which would, I think, controvert the point of the bill, or for another videotape deposition. The amendment that I proposed basically allows only a during-trial type of examination, either by closed-circuit television or other audiovisual means, which would, of course, include a videotape. The American Bar Association Model Act, which I think much of this original bill, not the amendment, but the original bill was taken from, foresaw that problem. I don't know if you have that, but that basically, that act provided on page 18 for a second video to be taken during trial, which would of course result in quite a bit of delays and inefficiency and unnecessary cost. I think the solution that I've proposed here would solve the problem. It would also be able to, it would allow us all to circumvent any constitutional problems concerning pretrial depositions. I have two other points I'd like to bring up briefly. Again, on the same page of the bill, lines 26 through 28, which basically allow allow a closed session for examination of the victim, I think definitely pose constitutional problems. When we discussed Bills 275, I believe it was previously, a week or two ago, it was brought up, the case, maybe it wasn't, but at least in the hallway, some of us discussed Oregon Publishing Company versus O'Leary. For the record, that's at 303 Oregon 297, a 1987 case. That case basically was based upon the Oregon constitutional requirement that justice shall be administered openly. And I will read a sentence from that case. It said that Section 10 is written in absolute terms. There are no explicit qualifications to its command that justice be administered openly. In order to be constitutional, a proceeding must either not be secret or must not administer justice within the meaning of Section 10. That case also said that making a transcript of the hearing available to the public did not meet the constitutional requirements. In this case, I think it might be argued that making the videotape deposition, a videotape of the testimony available to the public would cure that problem, but I think that case held otherwise. Also, State versus Bowers, another Oregon Court of Appeals case, for the record at 50 Oregon Appeals, page 1, 1982, that was the same situation as this case, this type of bill would involve. It was a child sex case where the district attorney asked to have the victim taken out of the court, or excuse me, have the public taken out of the court during the testimony. The court reversed that case and held that it, too, was unconstitutional under the same constitutional provision. Finally, the remaining part, I think that would be lines 28 through 34 on that same page. I think we've also discussed the case Coy versus Iowa at 108 Supreme Court 2798, 1988 case. That case, again, was basically on point as far as there being constitutional problems with preventing the defendant from being able to confront directly the victim in the case. By having the victim testify behind a screen, I think you'll directly violate the constitutional mandate of the United States Constitution as expressed in Coy versus Iowa. Also, I don't know how familiar you are with the Oregon Constitution, but it is virtually always construed in a more strict manner than the federal Constitution. The Oregon Constitution also requires face-to-face confrontation. So I think those last two paragraphs will eventually be exposed to vacation by this Oregon Supreme Court. I would urge you not to pass those and require that kind of litigation and expense. That's all I have on that. Are there any questions?
Thank you. Other questions?
Pardon my ignorance on this. You say the last two paragraphs, I was probably drifting when you started. What exactly do you say should come out in order to help this pass constitutional muster?
The first one I brought up was lines 26 through 28, where it starts only the judge and ends during the child's testimony.
Okay, all right. It's what you have on your amendments. I heard you say last two paragraphs, and that's stopping
okay.
Because it's all part of a
You're right,
paragraph.
It is. I had it marked off on my copy here. And also, from the end of that sentence where it says during the child's testimony, all the way to the end, lines 28 through 34, that would be the second problem, the Coy versus Iowa. I urge you to consult with your counsel on that, and I've sent him the cases. I don't know if he's had a chance to look at those yet.
Thank you. We will circulate
you.
Around. Are there questions for the questions? Thank you for your amendments.
Thank you.
I do want to hear, let's see what we have. Nola Johnson is here. I'm trying to look for people who have not had an opportunity to even come before this committee at all. They've made an effort to come down, so I do want to call on Nola. Oh, we do have another. We have another amendment. Please introduce your name for the record, please, and then.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Nola Johnson, and I'm here to provide information on Senate Bill 516. My son, Benjamin, is a victim of sexual abuse. I say this in the present tense, because even though the original incident occurred 1.5 years ago, when Benjamin was 2 and 3 years old, he remains a victim today. We are both still involved in support group and counseling to help us learn to effectively deal with this trauma. Such counseling is usually necessary for years. It may in fact be a lifelong need. My child goes through many stages of emotional trauma: denial, guilt, fear, and rejection in others because of both the physical and damage that is done. Abusers typically tell the child victim that something terrible will happen, either to the child or to the child's parent. If the victim tells anyone that is happening, in addition, the abuser may tell the child that he or she or her parents will no longer love them if the truth becomes known, or that the abuse is in fact the child's fault. For all of the reasons, it is very difficult for a child to seek help or to accuse the abuser. It is an even more difficult task for a child to stand up in a public forum before the accused abuser and describe the abuse. The child is forced to describe a living nightmare and to see face to face the person who has hurt and threatened and scared them. A child should not be put through a public courtroom procedure that is so scary and so intimidating and brings back all the awful things that happened. Children do not understand the need for courtroom procedures or why they are being forced to do something so frightening to them. They are victimized once by the abuser and a second time by the legal system when they must testify before what has happened in a court of law. I strongly believe that the change allowing videotape or closed circuit testimony of child victims in sex abuse cases is necessary. It is cruel to force children to face their abusers. Our children need our protection. Passing this bill would help create a safer environment for the child who must testify against someone who has hurt them. This concludes my prepared testimony.
Thank you very much for coming. We know it's hard to do, and we appreciate your taking time to share with us your thoughts. And your
appreciate your courage in sharing.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have people who have to go to a committee. I would like to continue till about 3:15. That's another 10 minutes, and take up at least the people who've come from some distance, who we have not heard from before on any of these bills. We have Laura Sebastian. Is it Sebastian? Okay, we'll pick her up then another time. We have Debbie Tucker from Lake Oswego. Is Debbie here? Pardon? How about Edna Vanderzanden from Forest Grove? I'm trying to pick people who we haven't seen.
Thank you. I appreciate that, because I did take off work this afternoon. And I did drive at considerable distance.
It's an interesting Forest Grove accent.
Huh?
That's an interesting Forest Grove accent.
Yeah. I will explain for the record. My name is Aldina Vanderzanden. I admire Senator Cohen's attempt at pronouncing my name.
I will also explain my accent a little bit before I get started, because I know y'all are probably curious. I am from Texas originally, and I did spend 7 years in Alabama. And so that I have been here for 6 years, and it hasn't gone away, so I don't think it will. It's kind of interesting to see that I don't see anybody I know here.
You infected that whole Vander's Anden clan with your malady?
Right. There are a lot of Vander's Andens in Forest Grove. Yes, there are. Anyway, I'm here. I have some prepared testimony. I signed up for three bills, Senator Cohen. I signed up for 275, 516, and House Bill 2367. I think I'm doing good at remembering the numbers. My concern, and y'all can read that. I won't read that for the record. I'll pass it out, and y'all can read that at your leisure. I also, one of the reasons I'm here is because of a $56,000 bubble bath. I mean, you just heard the very poignant testimony of a lady whose child was abused. Okay, there is another side to this. My husband was wrongly accused of sexually abusing his daughter because of a bubble bath he gave her on the Saturday before Easter. To make a long story short, you know, I mean, things got blown out of control. Children's Services Division got involved. The little girl's talking about a secret. She remembers that her father had applied medicine sometime in the past. The man was criminally charged, and it cost my family $56,000 in legal bills. Now, I know that Senate Bill 516 has to do with closed circuit testimony or videotaping. Videotaping is already admissible in court if the defense does not object. In our case, a videotape was done by the CARES program at Emanuel Hospital, supposedly a model program. And I do have some examples in my prepared testimony, which I'll dig out in a minute, about how they do their questioning there. And this is a videotape deposition. You know, it's a videotape thing. And what they basically do is they start out with a premise that there has been abuse. And then they badger the child. The example I give you, I mean, you know, I didn't want to Xerox the gross things they made the little girl say. It's about the little girl testifying whether or not she knows the difference between a truth or a lie. And they say, do you know the difference between a truth or a lie? And she says, nope. And she says, well, what if I held up this green pen and said it was black? Oh, well, you could be teasing me. Oh, well, I think, you know, she asked her a couple more questions. And she says, oh, I think you do know the difference between a truth or a lie. Well, all that proved was that the little girl knew her colors. Now, you know, I've spent $56,000 in legal bills. I also spent a good deal of that was on psychologists. And this is what I've gotten from our extensive psychologists that were involved in our trial, that all that questioning determined was not whether she knew the concept of a truth or a lie, was whether or not she knew that the color green was not the color blue.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you now and say that probably the same question about truth or a lie, knowing the difference between truth or a lie, would happen whether it was on videotape or in a full.
It is on videotape. I'm sorry, I didn't know you had the videotape equipment here, or I would have brought the CARES program videotape and let you see for yourself what they did. And the point I'm trying to make on this is supposedly they're the ones who deem themselves as the objective observer. And they were not objective. And if they're the model program, I would hate to see what some prosecutor would do to people behind closed doors. A second thing on videotaping, and I'm glad I got called up here before CSD, is, you know, part of my I've been very critical of CSD. But I've tried to be constructive in my criticism of the agency. I participated at great personal expense of time and money and time off work in three videotaping panels. And what people were concerned about there were a lot of citizens that came. And the citizens were concerned what they wanted in videotaping was a complete, accurate example, a record, of what the CSD worker or what the mental health worker or what this child went through before they made these allegations. Okay. Then a couple of lawyers came, and a couple of them are here too. It's good to know that public servants have all, that district attorneys have this all this time where they can come and testify before the legislature. But anyway, several of them testified, and they were concerned about the legal implications, and which has probably led to part of this bill. One of the lawyers that did come from the Defense Lawyers Association was John Henry Hingston. He did not come in person. He sent his secretary with typed testimony, and I have it Xeroxed for y'all also. You might want to see, besides Mr. Robert Reed, who has already testified on behalf of Oregon Defense Lawyers, you might want to read what John Henry Hingston had to say, and he's secretary of the national organization. He gives his credentials in the first, so I won't read his.
Thank you. Are there questions? We will take your testimony. We'll get it put in the proper files with the proper bills. And
I have to, you know, I made 10. I did have another hand up, but I'll wait and see if I get to talk again.
You're not going to get to talk again today because we're going to adjourn in 4 minutes, probably.
Okay.
So we appreciate all of your handouts, and we'll put them in the proper places.
The other one,
just make sure you get the name, your name attached to them, if you would.
Okay, thank you. The other one is about the infamous clock case over in Newport. The same people that are involved in the CARES program, supposedly the Model Assessment Center, were involved in the clock case. And, of course, you know, the senator from Newport should be very aware of their
Thank
case.
You.
Thank you.
Let's call Opal Van Comer from Roseburg.
Okay, she's not here. I need a feeling on that.
Okay. Gayla, come on up. And I hope you can... Thank you.
I'm Gayla Steele from Roseburg, and I am against the videotaping in the court. I mean, I watch children videotape when they're with the CSD counselors, but I am against children the videotaping in court in lieu of the child facing the accuser. I feel that that's our constitutional right. Several times in the history of our nation, we have, when we feared for our children, there have been times when we feared for our children, our nation succumbed to hysteria. And one of the times was during the Salem witchcraft trials. And at that time, the judicial branch lowered their standards to allow spectral evidence. If you remember from your history reading that, they began allowing the accusers to testify that the shape or the spirit of the accused had been doing evil deeds. And then they also began allowing a touch test. If the girls went into a frenzy when they touched the accused, then they had uncovered another witch. And it wasn't until a prominent judge's, his own wife was accused, that those trials ended. A more recent time when we feared for our children was during the McCarthy era, when we began looking for a communist under every bed. Many had to publicly defend themselves from innocent statements made earlier in their lives. And remember, it was Congress that allowed individuals' rights to be suspended so that the communists could be found. And now again, I'm fearing that we're facing hysteria brought on by a desire to protect the children. But you must remember that it is the responsibility of this legislative body to keep in perfect balance the desire of children's services to protect children and the protection of the rights of the general public as guaranteed by the Constitution. It is not the time now for you to be taking rights away when we are in the middle of this hysteria. This happened during the Salem witchcraft trials and in the McCarthy era, and we don't want it to happen again. I remind you of the tunnel vision approach that Children's Services has so proudly defined for this. Well, I thought I was going to speak to the same panel, but to the last panel.
Okay, if you could just quickly,
in 3 minutes,
can read your testimony.
1 minute. Whenever a child claims abuse, it is believed, and it is up to the accused to prove otherwise. I remind you of your duty as legislators to the whole state and system and its people. Unless you guard the constitutional rights of individuals in this area, 10 years down the road, you too will have lost far more than any of us suspect today. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Grinsky.
I do have to go to the Labor Committee, as does Senator Shoemaker. I want to apologize to those witnesses who maybe you're going to let testify that I won't be able to listen because I have another committee I'm already late for, but yep. I appreciate your coming.
Thank you.
I have to drive to Klamath Falls this afternoon.
Yes, we do have Ruth Dennison signed up. Okay, we can get you back if you're. Velma, I see. We've heard from Velma before. Bud says he can come back. Judy,
she can.
The only person I'm interested in, I get Bill Davis, who's come from Winston.
Okay. I'm representing Bill also. I'll represent the next time.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, for the opportunity to address this committee today. I, in fact, represent thousands of people who are falsely accused every year in the state of Oregon. One only need look at the public record that would be supplied to you under the Freedom of Information Act by CSD to see how many people are actually falsely accused in the state of Oregon each year. One thing that's happened is we've relied on a lot of emotion and very little facts in the child abuse cases. I got actively involved, not because I was falsely accused, but because a person in a neighboring community who I'd known for many years, who had a daycare, was falsely accused. She was accused because she had fired a teenage girl, and the girl became disgruntled. So I began to research the area of false allegations, knowing it was quite risky because not only do we have the District Attorney's Association, who I fear are on the verge of prosecutorial misconduct in many of these cases, but now we have the National Center for the Prosecution of Child Abuse, who comes into the state and actively helps the district attorneys prosecute a case. Now, I'm telling you...
Okay, I'm going to have to stop you to ask you, could you identify yourself for the record?
I'm Judy Byers. I live in Lebanon, Oregon.
Thank you.
So back to the prosecution. What's happening in many of these cases, I'm going to give you a few cases here in Oregon that maybe you've heard the names. I'm sure Senator Brenneman will recognize the Clark case. The Clark case cost that wonderful young family $85,000. Then, of course, there was the Proctor case. The Proctors, a wonderful black family in Portland, Oregon, took in a foster child, not told by the agency that she had severe emotional problems. The father was falsely accused. Fortunately, a well-known Portland attorney took pity on people because they were poor, they were black, and they were vulnerable. Some of the other cases, the Vanderzantens, I think Eldina mentioned, the $56,000. The Helbergs have spent a lot of money, and the Laudenbecks, a daycare case in